I'm on now.
I got the mic on. Okay, I want to tell a little bit about a special conversion story. It's actually about a little boy. In fact, he's a baby just about when I first met him. He was in Nanine, and the translator, I showed you a lady a couple of times this morning, Christy. She lived, and that was her nephew. And I usually sometimes got a hotel nearby where her mother lived and she lived. And her mother, this conversion story, her, when she first became a Christian, her mother kicked her out. They were sort of separated for 5 years because she became a Christian. Later, her mother was converted, and she now has a house church. She has about 30 people meeting in her home every Sunday. And this little boy is a nephew of Christie's, and introduced to my life. He was a rebel. He was he knew the world, and he would had no respect for anybody else's property. Sometimes he would be brought into my hotel room where we were having a Bible study, and he would wreck the whole place. I used to have to follow him around everywhere just to keep him from destroying the hotel room and costing me a lot of money. And he interrupted many Bible classes. But one day, they left him with me. And he went over there to, you know, in the hotel, you've got all kind of things, telephones and all that electronic stuff and TV monitors and all that type of thing in the hotel room. And he playing with everything, and I had to go over there and I, you know, tried to tell him. Of course, he doesn't speak English or understand it at all, and he's about 2 or 3 years old. And well, I just keep working on him, pulling his hand away. I eventually just slapped him on the wrist. He never had that happen in his life, I can tell you that. He looked at me and he started crying, and he wouldn't have anything to do. He sulked. He quit doing it. And like kids, and about, you know, I always played with him a lot. And about 20 minutes later, he was back being my best friend again. And the first time he went to do something like that, I just said no. And he looked up at me and he walked away. And every time after that, he was like that with me. Now, he still ran his grandmother crazy because she would never discipline him. But this little boy, mainly because of Christie's influence, you see him there in the sort of the middle of the picture. That's a worship service, and he leads their singing. And he sings out. He knows the songs by memory. And he also has begun to read. And he started reading on his own the Bible. And you can catch him almost any time he's got opportunity. He has his book out reading it. And he knows the stories. He reads the Old Testament. He reads all of it. Again, his aunt is sort of teaching him this. Here he is with a group of youngsters, and probably you haven't seen pictures like this in China, but there are parents that want their children to learn God at a young age, so they have Bible studies together. There's a list of future preachers, right? And this is always touches my heart to... I've been there long enough where even people that I baptized when they were in college now are, of course, mothers. And some of them that I learned already grandmothers. So it's such a wonderful thing to see all the different generations. They've converted their moms and had chances to baptize people in their 90s, things like that. It's just a touching thing to me, and I just wanted to share a little bit of that with you tonight. These are all church situations and people bringing their children. I wanted to share with you a little different pictures than what you saw this morning of just teaching churches and groups of Christians. I told you about my wife and I went to the University of Colorado, and they gave us a student every year, and we had a lot of Chinese people in our home. Just recently, in the last 6 years, the Confucius Institute, which is run by the Chinese government, they have a program with the United States where they we'll send people in China that teach English, Chinese people that teach English at their university level, professors. They send them to America for 1 year, 2 years. And they teach now at American elementary schools, junior highs, and high schools, they teach Chinese to American students. And our St. Brain school system in Longmont, Boulder area, they started this about 6 years ago. And so many of the schools have this Chinese language offered now in the school. I knew a Christian lady there, a Chinese lady in Longmont area, and I've worked with her in different things in trying to reach the Chinese community there. She was hired by the St. Brain school system to, when these teachers came in, and the first time was only three in the whole school system. They came in, we had to find them apartments, and she asked me to help her, and we lined those apartments up, and I asked the people in the church if they had extra furniture or could go garage selling and get some things to get their apartments fixed up before they came. And then Linda and I did a lot of work, leg work, of getting a bank account, heat turned on, things like that. And so we've done it every year, and those first three that came in, all of them stayed 2 years. And so we got very close to them. They were in our home very often. They're very, still very dear friends of mine, even though they've gone back to China. But one, I'm going to show you, Tracy. I went to her hometown this last trip in the fall. And she is a professor at a medical university. So they study Western medicine, not the Eastern style of medicine. And so they have to learn English in order to do that. So they have a large English department. There's about 40 faculty members that teach English to all the doctors and nurses and people that are training for a medical field in Western medicine. So here's Tracy and her husband. Her husband actually visited the United States while she was here for a couple of years. She has a daughter that is 16. By the way, you know, because of the one-child policy, that's the only daughter they had, but they removed it. And so recently, Tracy is due to give birth here in the next week or so. And so we'll have her second child, one 16, ready to go to college, and one a newborn. So their life will definitely change all of a sudden. Anyway, I'll just go through some of the pictures here. This is when I went to see her, she arranged, this is her like basic university English, the people that are starting out studying medicine. They're 19, 20 years old, like the junior in college. And I got to teach this class that morning, her class. Then later on, well, this is still some of the same, there's Tracy, that their teacher. Here she has about 300 students. This is just about half of them. And she, boy, I must have skipped over something. I got ahead of myself. I guess that's it. This just shows somebody got the idea that they need bicycles to sort of rent them out. You can go and take that bike. You have a little combination you use on your phone, and you get a code word, you put it in, you pull the bike out, and ride it anywhere you want and leave it. It's caused huge problems. I read an article on it, and there's companies that got in on this, and they all dove in there with the same idea at the same time, and you got thousands of bicycles sitting there not used. And they just get in the way, and people sometimes get so angry they're always left in the way, they just throw them and damage them. So I've read stories about that. Both directions. There must be several thousand bicycles along that street. Of course, it's near a university campus. This shows you some of the vegetables, beautiful. This is not like it was when I first went to China. I've never seen anything as pretty as this, but I had to take some pictures of it. Here's a class in the afternoon. These students are in between 25 and 35 years old. They're getting their PhD in medicine. And so I had a chance to talk to them about marriage, and I had Bible verses on the screen. What would happen if I did that in America right now? Went into a university classroom and had Bible verses on the screen. It's really crazy, isn't it, to think of the change. Now, I'm sure, well, she got it okayed by her dean, okay? So she wasn't going to get in trouble personally, but he was a little bit nervous about it himself. He wasn't a believer. Tracy, I went there mainly because I wanted to follow up with her, too. And she did come to the point of belief while I was there, even though she's not been baptized yet. I'll try to go back there this spring. So there's the class of PhDs in medicine. They all were very wonderful. I have some correspondence with some of them. Here's the dean of the school. He actually asked me in that afternoon if I would teach an introduction to the Bible, not just a marriage lesson, and, you know, based on the Bible. But he he copped out at the very last. There was a huge meeting in Beijing that week, and a lot of pressure, and they looked at everything really closely. So he was going to come and introduce me, and he said, I won't do it unless I can introduce you. He didn't show up. And she basically told me that he really got cold feet, worried about what would happen and something would happen to his job. So I had to do the marriage lesson. It's a little, had Bible verses, but it wasn't, you know, just introducing the Bible story like he asked me to do it one time. Anyway, next time I go back, that may work out. I'm invited to go back. So there's Tracy and her, the dean of the English department there at the medical school. And by the way, that's something... Not sure why this is not working. All right, here's just the lesson I did. And we find that these are faculty members. These are the English teachers in the school. And that's her co-workers in her department. And that was a very great bunch of people. I had a question and answer session, got them to write on a sheet of paper their questions. I had 50 questions come out of that group. And I had about 20 minutes set aside to answer it. But we only got just the top little stack. I said I would try to answer all those questions later on and send them to her. I have not done it yet, so I failed in that. Let's go back then. Any questions on China right now before I move on to the Bible class? Anybody have a question about the work there or something that caught your attention? Yeah, that's still, you have to be really careful as far as the church. When I go to, you know, the one I showed you this morning about, like, the tourist place we went to, you know, resort, and we had Bible teaching there. You know, that was, they didn't, the hotel didn't know, and they weren't going to turn you in. You're getting their, you know, our money, you know, to pay for the room. I suppose if somebody was really watching one of the Christians that came there, or me, they would have stopped it. So that's still very possible. You have local churches. I said they meet in this apartment over here. You'd be a lot of them meeting. Again, if they keep it quiet and don't get anybody to turn them in because they're noisy or that type of thing, and the police don't know, they're not going to go in there knocking on doors on Sunday trying to find those places. However, if you got a complaint, they would, you know, kick you out. And for those reasons. But there's other reasons. When you have some of the Chinese preachers that are there now, when they get growing and they've got several congregations and they get people together, they can get in really bad trouble. They'll go for the leader. To stop them, they'll threaten arrest, will arrest them, put them in prison. One situation happened this year. There was one province, I may have mentioned this to you in the past, for about a four-year period, even the state churches, the ones that were legal, the government, a Chinese leader came in and he saw all the high-rise buildings that they were building, you know, modern cathedrals, you might say, something I wouldn't care about myself. But the Chinese leader saw them and said, we can't let this happen. Christianity has this much of a visible sign. So he actually ordered, there was 500 church buildings, all the crosses were taken down. They acted like it was building code, that you had to have a shorter building. But they actually took all the crosses and steeples off the building, totally wrecked a $3 million building in Wenzhou. They destroyed it with bulldozers. So that went on for a while. And there was a couple of Christian men, one of them I know personally, one of them is his friend, but I don't know him. They were both lawyers. And they went and tried to do by law to try to get some reparation for the loss of church buildings and so forth in China. And this young lawyer disappeared for a whole year, just off the face of the earth. Then one night, just about 4 or 5 months ago, he appeared on national TV. And if you've ever seen, like in Iran or North Korea, where they have some foreigner in there and they appear, you know, on film or whatever, you can tell they're beaten, they're browbeaten, they've been tortured, and they confessed their sin. So on national TV, he did that. And, of course, everybody that knew him knew he was a totally different person and had been brainwashed and not just lying, you know, to him to stay alive, I guess you would say. So it's still going. I had his friend contacted me wanting to get out of the country, and I looked for some schools for him to go to, and he postponed it a while to try to get out. But me and him together would have been a hot potato, either somebody following me or somebody following him. So it wasn't real safe for us to get together. So that's still going on. You know. Anybody else got a follow-up or a different topic? You know? I don't know of a, I mean, yes and no. I mean, they're much poorer than we are, so there's all kind of things that can be helped. There are, you know, as I said this morning, I mentioned the men are baptized in Guangzhou, and they own a factory, and they've got money. So there's actually some help sometimes within China that's there. I tell you what, if I find certain needs that can't be handled there, I'll certainly tell, you know, people about it. But I mean, everywhere you go, there's beggars, and you know, I showed a lot of pictures this morning, very nice places and modern buildings, and everything is getting great for some people. But there's a wide disparity of income. There's a lot of people, unemployment's probably 25% versus our 4%, that type of thing. There's just a huge mass of people coming from the countryside into the cities, and they're living in, you know, crates and cardboard boxes type of thing with children. Laws there say that if your school system, all your medical care goes with your hometown where you were born. So if you have to move to get a job, you have no coverage. You can't send your kids to that school in that city. You can't get medical care. Everything, you're just on your own. There's no help for you. So it's a lot of disparity in how people live and how they're prospering in the country. But there's poverty everywhere. So there's certainly needs that are there that can help. Just to tell you, the growth of Christianity, Christy, she got interested in what I used to call Burma. Now it's Myanmar. It's a country torn by war. Muslims attacking Christians. People are fleeing from there, even across the Chinese border. I've been right on the border and taught a group that come from that, the Burmese DNA, you might say. They're not Chinese, Han Chinese. They live in China, though, in the borders. But very impoverished people, but yet they are helping refugees, you know, that come in to them. So, it's a big need in some ways that are there. And she raised money. They have something like you have here in the United States where I forgot what the name of it is, but it's like when my grandson got cancer. My son didn't do it, but somebody else opened up an account for people to put some money in, and my son closed it down in the sense that he had good insurance, and you know there weren't any immediate trouble at that time. But you can do that on the internet. They can do it in China, and they put out to send people into Burma to take food and clothing and to spread the gospel there. Christy actually went through the border illegally to get in there, went forded rivers, and went through the jungle to get where she was going. And they managed to raise money and actually pay Christians that volunteer to go in and work with those people. I've got pictures myself. I didn't put them on my slides today. They're actually, Christians I know in China are evangelizing in other countries. China, you saw the construction that's going on. 90% of the world's cranes are in China. They've been building for 25 years, and a lot of companies are very good at it. And they now, what China is doing to sort of take over the world, you might say, is they go into Africa, they go into South America right now, and they offer construction. We'll do your infrastructure. Give us your gold. Give us your silver. Give us the special precious metals and things of that nature that your country can supply to China. And so they're entering a lot of that. But then they send, 100,000 people in this country in Africa, another 100,000 over here. And some of those are Christian people. And if Muslims are going to be reached, it's the Chinese Christians are going to do it because their government has ties with that. They're not as unpopular among the Muslim countries. So anyway, it's just some of the any follow up question to that. I sort of got in a broad answer there, but okay. Let me go ahead with the lesson here. We haven't got too much time. Let me get through. Remember this morning we talked about two things you can remember that will really help you in Bible prophecy. And that is the fact that God scattered Israel as a form of punishment after he divided them. So remember what God did to punish division of the nation into two parts, into Judah and Israel. And then he scattered them all over the world. And when I say all over the world, that's an important statement to understand. When the Bible talks about the whole world, let's refer you to a verse in Luke chapter 2, verse 1, about the birth of Jesus. It says, Caesar, Augustus, taxed or counted the whole world. You understand? Did he mean planet Earth? I don't think so. The Bible writer Luke does not talk about the whole world being planet Earth. It was the Roman Empire. What is the Roman Empire? Let's look at some of the slides here that we didn't get to this morning. Did Hosea? I meant to have this in place and I didn't do it. Let's go look at this right here. 100 years later, Judah was taken captive by what we call Babylon and sent them out into another place. So the Jews were scattered at that time. Northern Israel's already been there 100 years, and now Judah is cast out and scattered among the Gentile nations. In 606 B.C., that's the time of Daniel, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, some other prophets as well. You get Daniel, talks about this great empire of God after the four empires, Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome on the right. We learn that in the latter days, Daniel was able to tell Nebuchadnezzar what would take place in the... What he means, he talks about the day of the fourth empire was latter days or the last days. And he talks about those four empires in the fourth kingdom, the last part of that on the screen. Then there was a fourth kingdom, that's Rome, called iron in as much as iron crushes and shatters all things. And you are that of gold, he told Nebuchadnezzar. There's another king coming after you and a third kingdom coming after you. And there'll be a fourth kingdom. So you can count them. And then Daniel said, in the days of those kings, that is the fourth, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed, and that kingdom will not be left to other people. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms, but it will itself endure forever. So the Bible is very plain about when the kingdom of God, God's kingdom, was set up. It's during the days of the fourth empire of Daniel's day. The premillennial says by saying God planned to set up his kingdom at that time. But when Jesus was rejected as the Messiah, God had to send him back to the earth to set up that physical kingdom that he had promised in the ultimate prophets. That's what they do. My God is not like that. He doesn't make this. When he says something's going to happen, it's going to happen. When John the Baptist came, what's the first words out of his mouth? The kingdom of heaven is at hand. That's in Matthew chapter 3, verse 2, and Matthew 4, verse 17. You have Jesus saying the exact same word. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. And Matthew 16, verse 27 and 28, it talks about that there would be some of those standing with him that would still be alive when the kingdom of God came. When Jesus came to judge Israel, it would take place at that time. I want to go back just a little bit to Amos that was follow up on Hosea this morning. Let's read Amos. He came about 15 years before Isaiah. The northern kingdom was still there. He says, "Surely the eyes of the sovereign Lord are on the sinful kingdom. I will destroy it from the face of the earth. Yet I will not totally destroy the house of Jacob, declares the Lord. For I will give the command, and I will shake the house of Israel among all the nations as grain is shaken in a sieve, and not a pebble or a kernel will reach the ground. All the sinners among my people will die by the sword. All those who say disaster will not overtake us or meet us." So in Israel, there would be the Assyrian army would attack Samaria. There would be many people that were killed. But a remnant would be put into captivity. They would be sent away as slaves and go to other countries. See, that's the good people that were sent into captivity. In Jeremiah's day, when Judah went into captivity, Jeremiah saw two baskets of figs. One basket was rotten, and one basket was good. The bad figs, he says, are the people in Jerusalem. The good figs are the ones who have already been taken away by the king of Babylon. They're the lucky people. They got removed from their home. They got put to a different place. But God scattered them for a purpose. They were the remnant. They were the believers in God. Now, the ones in Jerusalem said, "We're the good people. We're still in Jerusalem. They got kicked out. We're better than our brothers." But Jeremiah says it's just the opposite. And the bad figs are rotten. They're going to be destroyed. And the good figs are safe where they are. God divided and separated them. Is what Amos is foreseeing here when the northern kingdom was taken away as well. All right, in verse 11, "In that day I will restore," that word restore. The disciples asked Jesus, "When will you restore the kingdom to Israel?" What they ask in Acts chapter 1, verse 8, 9, somewhere in there. All right? "In that day," remember, "in that day" is a messianic type term when you read your prophets. "I'll restore David's fallen tent. I will repair its broken places, restore its ruins, and build it as it used to be, so that they may possess the remnant of Edom and all the nations that bear my name, declares the Lord, who will do these things." Now remember that when David was king, he conquered Edom. He conquered the Gentile nations around about him, all the way from the river Euphrates down to the river of Egypt. That was David's boundary when he died and gave it to Solomon. Solomon blew it, and God took that away from him and divided the kingdom at the end of his reign. Now this verse, to interpret that verse, I would have a hard time as a Jew when I read what's on the screen about the ruins being repaired, built up. I would think physical. There's actually going to be a restoration of physical Jerusalem and the physical palace and the physical temple that's in Jerusalem. But remember, Paul says a revelation was given him to interpret prophecy, and people like James and Peter and John, the writers of the New Testament, they also received that revelation. Look at James in Acts chapter 15. Where there's the issue about circumcision, or whether the Gentiles that are coming in should keep the law of Moses. Peter spoke first and rehearsed what happened at Cornelius' house, and how that God showed him the Gentiles were equal to the Jew. Then Paul got up after that and spoke about his missionary tours into the first one into Galatia. And talked about how that they baptized Gentiles without forcing them to keep the law of Moses. So he said, "And God approved our work with signs and wonders." And then James got up and he says, "Simon," or Peter, "has described to us how God at first showed his concern by taking from the Gentiles a people for himself." It's talking about Acts 10, Cornelius. "The words of the prophets are in agreement with this, as it is written." And he quotes Amos. "After this, I'll return and rebuild David's fallen tent. Its ruins I will rebuild and I'll restore it, that the remnant of men may seek the Lord, and all the Gentiles who bear my name." Remember, the Old Testament verse actually says Edom. But James refers it to Gentiles. It goes on there and says, and the nations, Edom and the nations. That's Gentiles. He quotes that part, says, the Lord who does these things that have been known for ages. It is my judgment, therefore, that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God. So Amos applied this passage about the restoration of Israel to his day, the problem they had about how to treat the Gentiles that are coming in to restore Israel. And the prophets all the time talk about this restoration of Israel, and it's going to include the Gentiles. Just look at, here's later on, here's the Persian Empire after Babylon. It gets bigger. It goes all the way into Iran, the Persian Empire. Esther, you know, it took place in Susa, the palace. She married a Persian king. All right, so remember that there were so many Jews there, and Haman wanted to kill all the Jews in the Persian Empire. And that's the story. God was scattering his people, but he saved the scattering Jews and kept them from being destroyed because he planted his people in all these different lands to prepare for the work of the apostles that were sent out. What a plan that God had. He's planting seed in these areas. Then you get the Greek Empire. It goes further west, all the way into Greece. And Alexander conquers all the way to the borders of India. Then, of course, then you follow by the Roman Empire. A much broader kingdom. And when Caesar taxed the whole world, what the Bible is talking about is that that would be Assyria, Babylon, Persia, Greece Empire, Roman Empire. Everywhere Caesar controlled, and all the countries where Jews lived, made the whole world, as far as the Bible is concerned. You read in Matthew 24, verse 14, the gospel of the kingdom will be preached to the whole world, then the end of the old covenant world will end. Colossians chapter 1, verse 6, Colossians 1, verse 23, Romans chapter 1, verse 8. The faith of the Romans had been heard all over the world. And the gospel had been preached at Paul's day when he was in prison in Acts 21, when he wrote Colossians. The whole world had heard the gospel. Understanding this will help us not make a mistake about Bible prophecy. It's the place where God scattered Israel throughout those five empires. That's the whole world of the Bible. If you're going to study the prophets, you keep that in your mind. Jeremiah 50, verse 17. Hosea 8, verse 8. Israel is swallowed up. Remember? He's going to scatter Israel by Assyria. Now she is among the Gentiles like a worthless thing. Jeremiah 50, verse 17 through 20. Israel is a scattered flock that lions have chased away. See, there's the beast. The first to devour him was the king of Assyria. The beast is a king. You'll see that in Daniel chapter 7, Revelation chapter 13. The first to devour him was the king of Assyria. The last to crush his bones was Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. Therefore, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. I will punish the king of Babylon and his land as I punish the king of Assyria. But I will bring Israel back. I'll regather, is what he's saying, Israel. Back to his own pasture. He will graze on Carmel and Bashan. His appetite will be satisfied on the hills of Ephraim and Gilead. In those days, at that time, there's that word again, messianic. At that time, declares the Lord, search will be made for Israel's guilt, but there will be none. And for the sins of Judah, but none will be found. For I will forgive the remnant I spare. In that day, what day? The day that Israel's sin was forgiven. Well, when did that happen? Here's your new covenant passage. Jeremiah says that I'll make a new covenant, and look at the bottom of the screen. I will forgive their wickedness and will remember their sins no more. The new covenant is with Israel, and God forgave their sin. Who is Israel? God scattered physical Israel, and He gathered together a spiritual people when He scattered them among the Gentiles. There were God-fearers meeting in every synagogue. There was a Roman centurion in the gospel story whose servant was healed that paid for a synagogue of the Jews in Capernaum. Cornelius was a Roman centurion that brought his neighbors and his family together, and God poured out His Spirit upon them, and they were accepted as equal among the Christians. But it was a battle in the first century church. That was the biggest issue about who is a child of God and what do the Gentiles have to do to be right with God. But the fact is, they were the offspring of Abraham because of their faith. Israel is being restored, what the Old Testament promise had predicted. Isaiah 11, verse 1. A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. Jesse is David's father. And from his roots a branch will bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. Most people understand that's talking about Jesus. Sometimes the prophets talked about the nation of Israel and other nations being cut down like a tree. John the Baptist, when he came, says, when he saw the Pharisees, he says, "You brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the wrath to come?" There's a judgment coming upon the leaders of Israel when John the Baptist came. He says, "The axe is already laid at the root of the trees. Every tree, therefore, that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire." When you go back to the verses right before Isaiah 11 about the branch coming from the root of Jesse, it says, "See the Lord Almighty." This is the last part of chapter 10. "See the Lord Almighty, will lop off the boughs or the boughs with great power. The lofty trees will be felled. The tall ones will be brought low. He will cut down the forest thickets with an axe. Lebanon will fall before the mighty one. A shoot or a branch will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his roots a branch will bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him." It's a person. The branch is a person. What does it mean? The tree is a stump. Turned into a stump. The tree was Israel. It's a great nation. Think of the redwoods. Think of that huge tree. God, in His parables, represents a nation. And God cuts that tree down to a stump. Now, when you look at a stump after you cut it down, it looks like the tree is dead. But there's still life in the root. And so you have this shoot come up out of the top after a few weeks or months. In Israel's case, when God cut Israel down, there was a branch that came out. There was a stump. There's the remnant. There's the Messiah that comes from that. He gives hope to the furtherance of Israel. A rebirth to the nation when a Messiah is born. Here's Jeremiah uses the same language. Says the days are coming. That's another messianic term. "In that day, in the days that are coming, I will fulfill the gracious promise I made to the house of Israel and to the house of Judah." What promise did God make? He said to Isaiah and Hosea, "I will restore and bring them into one nation." "In those days, at that time, I will make a righteous branch sprout from David's line. He will do what is just and right in the land." Other prophets predicted the same thing. Zechariah, "Listen, O high priest Joshua, and your associates seated before you, who were men symbolic of things to come." In other words, Joshua was a symbol for Jesus. Jesus is the second Joshua, this high priest. When you read the whole chapter there in Zechariah chapter 3, Joshua, his robe is filthy, and Satan brings an accusing point against him. Do you understand how filthy it was to be a high priest or a priest in the temple? Do you understand the number of sacrifices? 200,000 lambs were killed on the day of Passover. Do you understand how bloody and messy that was for the priest to take part in that? He bore the blood and the sins of Israel on his garments, and Satan is pointing a finger at him. He's a sinner himself. And God comes and cleanses him and talks about he is a symbol for the coming Joshua. What does Joshua mean? It means God saves. It's a different spelling for the word Jesus. It had the same name. Jesus is the second Joshua. John is the second Elijah. Jesus is the second Moses. The second David. Zechariah 6. Watch this carefully. Tell him this is what the Lord Almighty says. Here's the man whose name is the branch. And he will branch out from his place and build the temple of the Lord. It is he who will build the temple of the Lord. He will be clothed with majesty and will sit and rule on his throne. He will be a priest on his throne, and there will be harmony between the two. The man's name is the branch. He'll build the temple of the Lord. He will sit and rule on his throne as a priest. That is loaded. It's a powerful passage. Most people in most denominational bodies, if you were to ask the people, Old Testament people had a physical temple. What or who is the temple of God today? And they'll say, we are. They somehow understand that. They know that. So when this temple that Jesus or the Messiah is going to build, what kind of temple is it going to be? You're going to find it in Ephesians chapter 2, where he talks about the Jew and Gentile, and the middle wall partition is torn down, and Jew and Gentile become one people, one body, one family, and they make up one holy temple. The last few verses of chapter 2 of Ephesians. He says that Jesus is the cornerstone and the apostles are the foundation. Then Peter adds in, we are living stones. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. We're the priests. We're the Levites. What a wonderful way to illustrate to people that be consistent. Physical temple in the old, spiritual temple in the new. You've got a physical city of Jerusalem that got conquered and ran over by Gentiles. You've got the heavenly Jerusalem that cannot be touched by any army or any bomb, can't destroy it. It's a spiritual city. If you've got a spiritual city of the heavenly Jerusalem, and you've got a spiritual temple made up of the people of God with Jesus as the cornerstone, then what about the land? Is it spiritual or physical? Study Isaiah 49. Read it. Study it. And you'll find it plainly teaches, and Paul quotes a verse from that chapter that solidifies the fact that the land is a spiritual land. That being in the land in prophecy is being in Christ. The old covenant, all the blessings were physical. The rain, the production of having lots of crops and lots of sheep was a blessing to Israel if they obeyed God. If they did not obey God, they would not have that. They would have drought. They would have starvation, famine. They would have armies that would come and destroy them. In the new covenant, we have a spiritual covenant. Jesus, as a priest, would rule on his throne. If people say today to you that Jesus is not king yet, he's got to come back the second time to the earth and be king, read this passage to them. He's going to be a priest on his throne. If Jesus is not on his throne right now, we don't have a priest. At the same time he rules, he is the priest. If he's not on his throne, he's not our priest. You're wasting your time praying to him. You're wasting your time trying to get forgiveness. King and priest go together, same time, not thousands of years apart. Notice in the same chapter it says that he's going to build the temple. Notice this. I did not read this until the other day and get it myself. And those who are far off
Read Ephesians 2. Those that are far off, were Gentiles, will come and build the temple of the Lord. Then you will know the Lord of hosts has sent me to you, and it will take place if you completely obey the Lord your God. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 10 through 17 describes a wise master builder. Watch how you build. Paul was a builder of the temple. After verse 16, it talks about we are the temple of God. In the very passage in Corinthians, Paul was building. He said, build with gold and silver, not with hay, not with straw that can burn up. Watch how you build. Make sure the converts that you make are really converted, that they count the cost of being a Christian. Keep them strong. Make them count the cost to become a Christian before they make that supposed decision. Jesus the branch. I'm going to skip over that for a second. I think I did that some before. Anyway, I'm going to skip over and real quickly, if you give me 10 minutes. But before this, I ran over the part about the wolf and the lamb lying down together. And the animal, wild animals and tame animals in the first part of Isaiah 11, along with the branch. And in verse 10, we learn that Paul quoted a verse here. In that day, the root of Jesse, when the wolf and the lamb, the Gentile and the Jew lie down together, will stand as a banner for the peoples, the nations, the Gentiles. The nations will rally to him, and his place of rest will be glorious. And Paul quotes that verse in Romans chapter 15, in verse 12. Isaiah says, the root of Jesse will spring up, one who will arise to rule over the nations, and Gentiles will hope in him. I'm just trying to show you that Paul, who received a revelation from God, interprets Isaiah 11:10 as talking about the Gentiles coming in his day. The chapter before 15 is Romans 14 that talks about the differences between Jew and Gentile in the church. There were some keeping days, some every day of life. Some not eating meat, some eating all food. There are all kind of things and different concepts and consciences of the Jew and the Gentile when they became Christians. And they were judging each other about these differences. And Paul says in verse 6, one not on the screen, he says, accept one another. That's the whole point. Fellowship each other with these differences. And then he brings up all these verses in the Old Testament about Gentiles. Rejoice with him. The root of Jesse is going to spring up and rise over the nations and rule them, the Gentiles. Now chapter 11, we've been talking about the scattering of Israel and the gathering. Watch this. And that day, that's the messianic, the Lord will reach out his hand a second time to reclaim the remnant that is left of his people from Assyria, from Lower Egypt, from Upper Egypt, from Cush, from Elam, from Babylonia, from Hamath, and from the islands of the sea. He will raise a banner for the nations and gather the exiles of Israel. He will assemble, in New American Standard says, gather the scattered people of Judah from the four quarters of the earth. Ephraim's jealousy will vanish, and Judah's enemies will be cut off. Ephraim will not be jealous of Judah, nor Judah hostile toward Ephraim. Those two nations, Ephraim represents the northern kingdom, the biggest tribe in northern Israel. Judah represents the biggest tribe in southern kingdom. Those two people will have peace with each other. God will bring together what he promised. Judah and Israel will be one nation again. The scattered people of Judah will come from the four quarters of the earth. Remember that four quarters of the earth. We're going to read it again just a second before we stop. He's going to gather what he scattered. Get the farming language. God scattered Israel. Now he's going to gather Israel. A great harvest is coming. But remember, he's got to winnow it. You've got to separate the grain from the chaff. When you go out to gather Israel in the first century, Paul goes in the synagogue. There's people that believe, and many of them are Gentiles. Makes the other Jews jealous. They drive him away. God's going to punish those people. He's going to bring wrath upon the physical Israel. There's going to be a judgment coming to winnow those as he harvests the crop of Christians there in the first century. Notice he says he reached out his hand a second time. Remember, two Davids, two Moses, two temples, two Jerusalems, two covenants, two women, Hagar and Sarah. Remember that parallel in Galatians 4? There's two returns to the land. After God drove Israel away, and then later he drove Judah away and scattered them. Remember, 70 years later, he promised that they could come back. And they physically came back. But only a very small number, 40,000 people, was all that came back out of maybe 3 million that were scattered. That was the first gathering of Israel back physically to the land. The second is always the spiritual. It's the greater. The second gathering is a spiritual gathering. God planted a physical crop. He planted a certain kind of seed, the physical people of Israel. When he went to gather them, he gathered the people of faith that were both Jew and Gentile to make one nation under King David. David being a type of the first David, the second David. The second gathering of Israel is what Jesus did. When people believed in his death and burial and resurrection. That's what the apostles were doing, was gathering Israel. And still, in a sense, that gathering still goes on. As Jew and Gentile in every century are gathered to him. That temple that Ezekiel saw that was so huge. Stones are being added still to that great temple as Israel is gathered one by one, including me and you. Matthew 24. I know you've studied this recently. This may tie in really good for you. Immediately after the tribulation. Notice that immediately. Not 2,000 years later is this passage, but he's talking about in being in Jerusalem when the armies came and they're supposed to run and get away. It's a first century event. And immediately after the great tribulation, the persecution that comes against the Christians and against Israel by the Romans, and the persecution that Jews gave to the Christians. The sun's going to be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky. This is prophetic language that talks about the darkening of a nation. Every time this language is used in the Old Testament, it is the fall of a nation. It's not talking about the end of the universe. The powers of the heavens will be shaken, and the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn. Who are the tribes? There's 12 tribes. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky. Notice how God came in the Old Testament in Isaiah 19. God came in a cloud, a swift cloud on Egypt. The next verse talks about war. When the sun, moon, and stars went out over Egypt in Ezekiel 32, it was an army. It even names Nebuchadnezzar being behind the army when the sun, moon, and stars of Egypt went out. Then notice the last part as far as our lesson. He will send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. Now you go back and look at the language. Verse 12. He'll raise a banner for the nations and gather the exiles of Israel. He will assemble, gather the scattered people of Judah from the four quarters of the earth. Is that not the same thing that Jesus is talking about when he gives this prophecy? A gathering together of Israel? A destruction of physical Israel is coming. Their sun and moon and stars will go out. But the elect will stand forever with God. They'll be a part of a new Jerusalem. They'll be a part of a brand new temple. They will rest in the land. That is, they will rest in their Savior, Jesus Christ. And Jesus makes it plainer when he says, "Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place." It's a first century event. Jesus plainly tells us that. All right, my time's up. Over. I will leave this PowerPoint, and I really haven't got to the heart of the lesson. I've got a lot of verses in the Old Testament that talk about the gathering of Israel. And you're welcome to have this. Study it. Get your Bible out. Look up the context. And you'll find there's other references in the New Testament books about our gathering together to Him. Does it have anything to do with what the Old Testament prophets spoke about? That's the question you need to answer. And it will really help you to understand your Bible. Okay, it's a Bible class. Any questions before we leave? You can pull me aside back in the back and we can talk some. I said I will leave. It's on the computer right now, this lesson. So just be willing, feel free to grab it. All right, we're going to have a song that we're going to sing, or do you do that on your Sunday night? Okay. You want to close out?